I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Health Cetera, that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Family caregivers are propping up our nation's ability to care for people who are ill, dying, or recovering from illness. In the report Home Alone, Family Caregivers Providing Complex Chronic Care, authors Susan Reinhardt and Carol Levine note that family caregivers are expected to do medical tasks that even health professionals find challenging, whether wound care or transferring a sick or disabled person from bed to chair or bathroom, or managing myriad medications. And yet most family caregivers are not taught by hospital personnel about how to provide the care that the patient will need once at home. Last year, Governor Cuomo signed into law the CARE Act, as have the governors of some other states. The new law holds hospitals accountable for preparing family caregivers to manage a patient's care after discharge. Here to talk with us about this new law is Dr. Susan Reinhardt, one of the authors of Home Alone, a registered nurse and director of the Public Policy Institute for AARP, where she is the Senior Vice President for Public Policy. Susan, thank you so much for coming back onto Health Styles. You've been on before and were on when the report on Home Alone first came out. So thank you for coming back onto Health Cetera.
Diana, it's so great. I really love to be on the show, and thank you for inviting me.
So let's start off talking about why a CARE Act was even needed. Why do you need a law that holds hospitals accountable for preparing family caregivers to take their loved ones home and provide complex care?
Well, it's a good question, because you would think you wouldn't need a law for that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
It seems common sense, right?
I know.
It really is interesting, but our research, this is national research across the country, and then lots of interviews, including interviews with people in New York, particularly New York City, people from various cultures, from various walks of life. We've talked to them directly, and what we find is that the research, the data itself, but even more important, all the stories coming from people living in New York tell us that this is not happening, at least not routinely. I don't mean to say that never does anybody get information and that nurses and doctors and other healthcare professionals are completely irresponsible. I don't mean that. I mean that it's not consistently done, where somebody is expected to take their husband, their son, their daughter, their wife, whoever, someone, a neighbor, a friend, home from the hospital with a lot of things that they're supposed to do, including even most commonly a list of medications, a lot of medications, some of them injections and eye drops and ear drops and patches, all kinds of things like that. And they might get a list, of course, and saying, here it is you're supposed to do, but not like, do you have any questions? Can we go over this? And in fact, I always say it's not just, do you have any questions? Nurses and doctors and other people, healthcare professionals, should be assuming that there are questions and anticipating questions and offering information and guidance even before anyone has to ask a question. So that's what this CARE Act is trying to do. Take this very, it seems almost obvious situation that people need information and guidance, instruction, and making it a law saying that family caregivers don't even have to ask or hunt around for someone. They should expect this. This is a law.
You know, Susan, I'm embarrassed. As a nurse, I'm embarrassed that we need a law to do this, but I can tell you that, as you know, my husband had some surgery last year, and it was after the act was passed. And nobody talked with me when I was there about, what do you need to be able to go home? I had to even ask 3 days after surgery, can I talk to a social worker about discharge planning? And we weren't given instructions about the wound care until a few hours before we left. So I can confirm that the system is not paying attention to family caregivers, but I'm hoping that this new law will change that. And I want to point out that even though New York has passed it, so have some other states, and others are considering it, correct?
That's correct. There are 27 states who have passed the law. Three of them are awaiting the governor's signature, But we expect that to happen in those states. So more than half the country is expecting change. And I think that's really very important. We expect that more states even next year will follow suit. As, you know, as their legislative sessions close, they may have to wait some time before they take this up again. But we do expect that this is going to continue in every state.
Great. So talk about the key elements of the CARE Act.
So, I do want to tell you before I go on that your law just went into effect last week. So this is very timely, Diana. You know, you pass a law, but usually you get a little time to implement it.
Yes.
Your law is in effect since last week. So hopefully you'll start to see some changes. And the basic, it's really rather simple when you think about it. The first part is that every person who is admitted to a hospital, regardless of their age or their diagnosis, this isn't only for older people, this is for anyone, are asked the question, do you have a family caregiver? Now, that can be asked in many different ways, of course. Many people don't know that they're a family caregiver, but that's the general idea of, you know, do you have somebody helping you with the care that you need? Some question like that needs to be asked. And if the person who's admitted says yes, then you're asked, would you like that person's name, that person, or even more than one person, to be part of your medical record? So that person's name can be put in, and everyone knows who then they're supposed to be talking to. Mm-hmm. Not just, we're not talking about a legal guardian. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's room for legal guardians, that's always asked, or who has medical power of attorney. This is simply like your next-door neighbor is the one that's going to be helping you. Then that next-door neighbor's name can be put into the record if you want it and if that person wants it. That way, the hospital, the nurses, the doctors, the physical therapists, the dietitians, whoever is working with you on what you're going to be doing when you go home will know who it is they should be talking to, who they can include in the instruction as they're working through with you, you know, during your entire hospital stay, ideally. And then the next thing is that if you are expected to do one of these medical nursing tasks, we call them, these could be wound care, medications that we already described. Some people have to do tube feedings or enemas. I mean, all kinds of things happen when people go, especially if it's a chronic condition that's going to expect it to go on for a while. Then that person has to be offered guidance, ideally with a return demonstration. Like, let me show you how to do it. Now you show that you can do it, you know, and ask lots of questions along the way. That's the ideal situation. And then finally, the family caregiver needs to be notified in as soon as possible that they know when the person's going to be discharged. So you're not called up an hour before, come pick up your mother, but rather ideally 24 hours ahead. But sometimes that isn't always possible.
So what if the hospital can't identify a family caregiver, the patient isn't able to identify a family caregiver? Let's say the patient is not very responsive or is confused.
Mm-hmm. Well, the nurse, it's usually a nurse, as you have pointed out, might notice that a family caregiver is coming by. And then the nurse hopefully will be able to talk to that family caregiver and say, are you going to be involved in this person's care? And, you know, talk to the patient. If the person is non-communicative, typically there is somebody who is a guardian or somebody who is speaking on behalf of the person, and they are listed in the record, too. The real question here is, are you expected to be giving care, not just be legally responsible?
So one of the biggest barriers in recent years to people really communicating, health professionals communicating well with family caregivers, has been the HIPAA. The, gosh, I'm not even going to remember what it stands for anymore.
It's like the Health Insurance
Portability and Accountability Act.
Yes, exactly.
And it's
us to figure it out.
Yeah, and it's this act that is the reason why when you go to the hospital or even a healthcare provider of any kind, there are all these forms for you to fill out about privacy of your healthcare or information and acknowledging that the institution will keep it private. How much has this been figured into the act in terms of how to get around the sharing of information? Is it solely in terms of the patient giving permission that this is my designated family caregiver? Is that sufficient?
Yeah, I mean, that law has been misinterpreted by a lot of people and has been used, frankly, as a way not to talk to family caregivers, when that indeed is not the case. It was never intended to rule out talking to family caregivers. But some hospitals or nurses and others interpret it like, I'm not allowed to talk to you. You've always been allowed to talk to family caregivers. You just need to say to the patient, can I talk to your family caregiver? Yeah. Typically, you didn't even have to sign anything.
Yeah.
But okay, sign something, you know. But it should be encouraged. We should be encouraging the patient to make it clear. Now, if they don't want you to, they shouldn't, obviously.
Yeah.
But if they do, we should do everything we can to include that person. So this now makes that even clearer, I think, that says, listen, do you have a family caregiver? Do you want us to put them in the medical record? And then there's no question that that person should be involved.
Yeah. Now, in the New York Act, the CARE Act, that there was an inclusion that the tasks needed to be recommended, that they were going to get, families were going to get taught about, needed to be recommended by the discharging physician. And I'm assuming that complies with other state laws and regulations that expect the physician to be in charge of the care. But I also know that many physicians miss essential elements of care that they don't even have a clue about. And I would hope that nurses would step up and say, okay, the physicians identified these things, but here are some other things you need to learn.
Right. I mean, that is the New York law. Not all the, all the laws are a little different. You know, we offered a state model. You know, here's an example of what you can do. And it's a wonderful thing. We have 50 states, right? So everyone
right.
does it a little bit differently. Right. New York did it their way, and that's the way they wanted to write it. New Jersey doesn't have it that way. It's less about the doctor. But, you know, it's all about team care anyway. We should be talking to each other.
That's right.
And the nurse should be talking to the physician or the physical therapist or dietitian. We should all be talking to each other. Mainly we should be talking to the patient and family about what it is that they need. So it should be as common sense as possible.
Yes.
Just really practical.
So where is the opposition coming from this bill? Is there any opposition from the law, from the bills that are in state legislatures that haven't enacted, or as experienced by states that have already enacted it?
Yeah, so even in your state, I think nurses, maybe some of the nursing groups were a little confused or alarmed or like, what is this? But like New York, many nursing organizations really do understand it once they are included. Mainly they want to be included. Of course they should. This affects their practice. So sometimes it's a matter of, where did this come from? I want to know more about it. That's a good thing. And they can often offer language that is better in the bill. Let's like try it this way. Why don't we do that? But there are some states where the hospital association, for example, opposes it. That's typically the opposition we see first. The hospital saying, we don't need a law. We already do it. And we know that it isn't already done. That's the whole point of the study that we did and all of these interviews and town halls. It again, might be done sometimes, but your own experience tells you it's not done routinely. So this law, we need to continue to tell the hospitals, is about consumers. It's not about the hospital. It's about people. And people are telling us they need help. And again, I think the real problem here, I don't think it's true that nurses never teach or what the hospitals are saying, like, this is what we expect. Yes, I think that's true. We expect nurses to teach and we expect doctors to explain, but people don't even know what to ask. That's the real issue. We have to understand that patients and family caregivers, while they're in the hospital, have everything going on. It's just like so amazingly confusing and scary sometimes. So they don't really know, well, okay, exactly, like, how warm should the water be? Or how exactly should I do that? They haven't a clue they should be asking that question. So what we need to do is have all health professionals get it in their minds that they need to proactively bring this up and write it down, not just talk about it. I like it. I'd like it if everyone could whip out their iPhones if they have one, or any way they could record it and say, this is exactly how it's done. So that they can see it again. And some places are doing that. Some individuals are doing it. It might make attorneys crazy. I don't know. They might not like my saying that. Yeah. But you know what? People have a right. They have their own ways
their
of
own
reporting
phones
things.
They could
or at least,
use.
Yeah. You know, anything they can do to make it clear for themselves. What exactly did they say? Because written instructions are typically for anybody, right? It's like, do these 10 things or whatever. But for your own mother, it might be a little different, or you might have particular questions of how you do something, or the dressing goes on a slightly different way, or I can't use that particular adhesive. I have to use a different kind of tape for my mother. So you really need to know exactly for my whoever it is, mother, sister, brother, husband, whoever it is, you know, this is what I need to do exactly before you leave the hospital. Frankly, even if you have a visiting nurse coming, even if you're so lucky to have a visiting nurse come, that nurse is not standing at your doorstep
waiting for you when you get home.
So typically you're going to have to do something before the visiting nurse comes. And I hope that you do get a visiting nurse, because I am a visiting nurse by background. I love them, and that would be ideal. But it isn't always the case that somebody comes.
And indeed, for my husband and I, it was 3 days before there was a visiting nurse, and he had 5 different long incisions that were all weeping and draining, and I thought about how I, as a nurse, even though I haven't done hands-on care for a long time, you can show me what to do, and I understand the principles, and I can do it. But for somebody who doesn't have a healthcare background, I can't imagine them getting through what we got through. So, yeah, it's very challenging. So, Diane, let me just say one more thing
about that. But people, when I said they don't know what to ask, there's another part of this. Many people feel they have no choice. Right? The doctor said, I need to do this, or the nurse said, this is what I have to do. So they don't even know that they could call somebody or ask for help. So they really do. That's why we call this study Home Alone. Yeah. They really do feel very alone, and we're trying very hard to help them not be alone.
Yes. So, Susan, let me ask you, so you're going a state-by-state approach to this. Why not go federally, except perhaps for the reason that Congress can't really decide on anything? Why go state by state?
Well, we think this, as many things in the world, start in states. Right. We do believe this activity will affect federal law or federal regulations. We already see signs that that's happening. You know, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are paying attention to this.
Great.
The Joint Commission accrediting hospitals are paying attention to this. The Institute of Medicine, that has a study on family caregivers now, are listening to this message. So the fact that this study came out helped what they call change the conversation. It's putting a spotlight on something that should be very easily recognized.
Yeah.
Right? And that's what it is. It's like, here it is. We got to do something. So I think you will start to see more laws and regulations changing. But states also like to do things the way they want to do it, too. So these laws make it possible for them to put their own stamp on it.
Right. And if I may be incorrect on this, but I believe the federal government's authority is really over Medicare and Medicaid by and large, and not private insurers. And so what, and they don't have, I guess they can do regulate hospitals that provide care to Medicare and Medicaid recipients, which is most hospitals. Yeah.
So they can say under their conditions of participation, things that they say can apply to everybody.
Yes.
But generally, they're very broad.
Yeah.
You know, they're not as specific as what I just said to you, within 24 hours or this, you know, it's got to be fine. They're not typically that specific. They're a little bit more guidelines.
Well, let me just remind listeners that you're listening to Health Cetera on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program, and I'm talking with Dr. Susan Reinhardt, a registered nurse, and the director of the Public Policy Institute for AARP. She's the author of one of the reports, an important report called Home Alone, Family Caregivers Providing Complex Care. And Susan, and we are talking about the CARE Act that was passed in New York and some other states, and other states are considering it, to hold hospitals accountable for ensuring that family caregivers know how to provide the care that is being expected of their loved one when they go home. And Susan, Home Alone is available at online for free, is that correct?
Yes, certainly. It's just AARP.org. That alone will get you, or you can say the Public Policy Institute.
Great. And
actually, you can just Google Home Alone and you'll find
it. Yeah, you do. Home Alone. Mm-hmm. Now, so I talk about the concerns about implementation of this law. Who's going to, what teeth does it have? Who's holding hospitals accountable? Do you have concerns about how it's being implemented?
Mm-hmm. So I would say that the implementation varies from state to state. Some have been specific, some want to have regulations in place. I have to tell you, my own dream is more that people understand it. If they get it, you won't have to worry as much about implementing it. This is so much about conversations and communications and understanding. Let me give you an example. My own hospital, the Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick, has been tremendously accepting of this. In fact, the New Jersey hospitals in general have been very accepting of this. Their law went into effect in May, so it's almost a year ago May they went into effect. So they've been really working at it. How do we implement this? And here's one of the most interesting things. So they put in the system, like, who's going to ask if you have a family caregiver? When is that going to happen? Mm. And they decided it should be in two places. At least when that person that comes and asks you what your insurance is, mm-hmm. that person, it happens to be called a registrar in our hospital, that person should ask, and the nurse on the floor should ask. So they've got two places. Here's the biggest thing. Neither these registrars or the nurses really knew what a family caregiver, who that is. Like, what does that mean? So in other words, they said, well, the person has a guardian. Why do we have to ask? We know it's the guardian. Well, no, the guardian may not be the family caregiver. It could be the financial guardian, someone who makes sure that the checks are done right and the finances are done right. That doesn't mean that person is going to, you know, change a dressing like you have to do. So we had to explain that. I didn't, you know, but others in the hospital really had to work that through. Let me help you understand, what is a family caregiver? Who is a family caregiver? Mm. How do you ask that question? So that in itself required training and thinking about that. And so implementation to me at this point is just trying to understand, how do you identify who the person or people are that need this help and get it clear to everybody who that is. And then understanding what techniques you could use. So right now we're developing videos. We just released last week videos on medication administration. This is something I'm doing with University, it's called UC Davis. This is California, University of California in Davis. And that School of Nursing worked with us to do 5 videos, starting with injections, for example. How do you give an insulin injection? How do you do eye drops and ear drops? Mm-hmm. A suppository. Mm-hmm. A number of different videos so that they at least show how to talk to family caregivers. We've learned from focus groups in New York City that you can't just say, here's how you do it, like you would teach a nursing student or maybe even a nurse's aide or something. You really have to start more with the context, like the story. And so we showed a family caregiver teaching her sister how to do a variety of different medication tasks because she herself was going to take a brief vacation, which is exactly what family caregivers need. Yeah. So it's all about how uncomfortable she felt, but she could take it on. It's a story. And that's what we're trying to learn more about, how to present this information, not just a big clinical situation that maybe you would show a nursing student. So how can hospitals develop the kinds of techniques and the kinds of, tools, teaching tools that might be useful in the teaching of family caregivers around these medical nursing tasks?
And Susan, when will your videotapes be available and where will they be available at?
So they will be available on the AARP website, Nurses Week. We're going to release them during Nurses Week.
That's
so
the first week
May
in May.
6th, I think, is mm-hmm. the first week of okay. May. May 6th, we will be releasing them on our website. And they will be available for free. And we'll be doing more. We're going to do more around how do you help somebody get in and out of bed? How do you use a wheelchair? And then we're going to do wound care. We're doing a whole lot of series. And we're very interested in what people think they need to learn.
Great. So we're about at the end here, but maybe you could share some thoughts to our listeners about what they want to think about in terms of if they're a family caregiver or know somebody who's a family caregiver or anticipate that they might be a family caregiver. What advice do you have for them?
The main advice I have is to realize they have a right to information. They are the most important resource to that person they're taking care of. They are the front line, the family, the guard, how I think of them. They're very valuable, and they have a right to information and support. So they should ask all questions, and if they don't know what to ask, just say, you know, I don't really know what to ask, but I know that I've got to learn how to do this. I would also encourage you to ask for a phone number. Who can I call when I get home? One hospital, St. Barnabas in New Jersey, heard that, and they have given a phone number, and they found that half the people that went home called like within a day.
Wow.
Yeah. You need a number, and usually it was around medication.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, this is really important information, and I thank you for your advocacy. I know you are a leader behind this work and the work that is going on in this country around trying to support family caregivers. They are so crucial to the people they're caring for, but also to our healthcare system. If you don't have family health care, family caregivers, what happens to the care that people receive? So
exactly.
You've been a fabulous advocate. So one more time, for people to get to AARP's website, they go to aarp.org, and if you'd like to find out what your state chapter is doing on this issue, go to aarp.org/states, and there'll be a list of states that will come up. I want to thank Susan Reinhardt, the director of the Public Policy Institute at AARP and the co-author of the report Home Alone, Family Caregivers Providing Complex Chronic Care. Thank you so much, Susan, for being on Health Cetera today.
Oh, thank you, Diana, and good luck as a caregiver yourself.
Thank you. So you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM New York. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's healthmediapolicy.com.